Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We are the daily show for Georgia Bulldogs fans, which means that most of our audience, huge percentage, you know, overwhelming majority, are Georgia Bulldogs fans themselves. We do, though, have a few folks who are not UGA fans who check in with our program on a pretty regular basis. I think part of it is just to kind of find out what the other side is thinking. Sometimes you want some enemy intel. And I did hear from some of the folks who listen to our show, watch our show, who are not Georgia fans, who said to me yesterday, BA, you didn't talk on Monday about Florida's win against Ole Miss. You're not giving the Gators any attention. You must be scared of what Florida did in Oxford against the Rebels on Saturday. And what I said was, listen, it's a busy Saturday in the SEC. It's going to be that kind of year this year with seven SEC games for the most part, at least until the bye start happening. You know, six, seven SEC games every single week. There's a lot of SEC action to break down over the course of a single Saturday. You can't cover it all in just one day unless we start going, you know, three and a half hours long, something along those lines. Maybe one day we will, but I think for now I'm going to try to keep this in kind of a consumable time frame for the show. But I said, you know, we've got, you know, Tuesday, we've got Wednesday to kind of focus on what happened the previous Saturday. We will get into all of it before it's done. So let's talk a little bit about Florida right now. And what I think is funny, and you can go back and listen to old shows from the past. I think this is the third straight year this has happened. Where are you familiar with Mike Bianchi? He's a columnist for the Orlando Sentinel. He does radio there in Orlando, and it's like one of the rites of fall, the same way that some of you like pumpkin spice lattes and things like that. That lets you know that fall's getting here. You start seeing those Halloween decorations showing up at Kroger and, you know, things like that. Well, the other kind of rite of fall, when you kind of know, well, summer's gone, autumn has arrived, is when Mike Bianchi writes his Georgia is Afraid of Florida column. He just does it every single year. I'm entertained by it to the extent that simp Florida fans kind of fall in line behind all of this. I'm kind of entertained by that as well. But there was one thing in particular that Bianchi put in his most recent Georgia is Scared of Florida column that kind of got my attention. He does quote a very good Florida tight end, and this is not a joke. Pitts really is a really good player. Kyle Pitts is quoted in here being asked about, hey, what did you think about Florida being ranked ahead of Georgia in the SECs in the official media predictions that you'll remember we spoke about last week. And Pitt says that he wouldn't say he was surprised by that. He says, let me start over again. Kyle Pitt says, I wouldn't say I was surprised that we were put in front of Georgia. He says, but it's about time. That's Kyle Pitts being quoted by Mike Bianchi from the Orlando Sentinel. So Pitt saying it's about time my team was picked ahead of the Georgia Bulldogs there in the SEC East. Now, listen, I'm not going to say a bad word about Pitts here, because if you're a player playing for a team, what else are you supposed to say? You're not supposed to, you're not going to say, yes, I was surprised that my team was ranked ahead of Georgia because Georgia's beaten our brains in the last few years. Of course, Kyle Pitts is not going to say that. So I'm not going to be kind of, you know, mad at him for doing that. I'll laugh at Mike Bianchi for trying to conjure up this storyline over and over again. I'll have some fun. I'll kind of laugh at that, but I'm not going to be mad at Pitts necessarily. I think it's just a perfect example, though. I'm going to cite another example here in just a moment. I think it's a perfect example, though, of the fact that there are some sharks kind of swirling in the water right now. After Georgia had kind of a shaky first half against Arkansas, after, you know, there's questions about who Georgia's starting quarterback is going to be, there's just a little bit of folks who are bored with Georgia winning the SEC East every year, or that they don't like Kirby Smart, or they don't like Georgia fans, or they don't like whatever. There's just a little bit of folks kind of waiting in the wings to sort of jump in here and say, see, I told you so. Georgia's a paper tiger. Georgia's not ready. Blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of that swirling around here as Georgia gets ready to take on Auburn on Saturday night. Let me do one thing, though, on Florida one more time, though, before I kind of, you know, get more heavily into Georgia and Auburn on Saturday and what Georgia can do to kind of prove some of the people who say, well, it's about time Florida's ahead of Georgia. It's about time Dan Mullen moved past the Georgia Bulldogs. But, you know, before I kind of get too heavy into Georgia Auburn, let me say one more thing about that. So Florida, after winning at Ole Miss on Saturday, which was apparently so impressive, Florida fans themselves seemingly thrilled about that. Dan Mullen certainly bragging on himself in his weekly press conference yesterday for the yards and points the Gators put up there. Somehow, some way, though, it doesn't seem like Florida fans are necessarily buying into this, at least all of them, the way in which maybe we're told they're supposed to. Did you see where Florida's got its home opener coming up against South Carolina on Saturday. We're obviously socially distant right now. Gators only expected to have, only allowed to have about 17 or 18,000, whatever the total number is, they can have there in the swamp. Did you know, though, that it looks like right now they're not even going to sell that many tickets? That Dan Mullen is having to beg folks to come to the game right now? If Florida's as good as everybody sort of thinks they are, and Mike Bianchi from the Orlando Sentinel keeps telling us they are year after year after year, would you really have a hard time selling 17,000 tickets? I mean, I was in Fayetteville, Arkansas on Saturday, and I can tell you that a huge portion of the upper level, 12-hour drive from Atlanta, was Georgia fans in Fayetteville. That's what a fan base who really believes in its team does. They scarf up tickets in Fayetteville, Arkansas, to get up there and see that game get played. But apparently Florida, who's supposedly, you know, surpassing Georgia in the SEC East, can't even sell 17,000 tickets in its own stadium. So kind of do with that what you will. But when you look at what's going to happen for Georgia and Auburn on Saturday, this becomes a chance for Georgia to kind of strike back against those who say, the Arkansas game kind of proves Georgia's not ready. The Arkansas game kind of proves that Georgia's got a lot of problems. This game on Saturday is a chance to kind of do battle against some of that kind of stuff. I thought it was interesting when Kirby Smart spoke to reporters yesterday. You know, one of the subjects that comes up is the quarterback on the other side for Auburn here. There's a lot we still don't know about who Georgia's quarterback is going to be. Is it Stetson Bennett, who kind of came in relief on Saturday, played very well? Does Dwan Mathis, who was Saturday starter, does he get another chance to show what he's all about? JT Daniels now medically cleared. We'll get more into that coming up in a moment. There's a lot we don't know about the Georgia quarterback situation. The Auburn quarterback situation, by comparison, seems to be completely locked down, completely clear. It's obviously Bo Nix, and maybe Nix ready to take the next step with his development. Kirby Smart did talk about that on Saturday. This is what Smart had to say.
He's got a vertical passing game now. He's got a great arm. He makes really good decisions. I mean, I think the not the dink and dunk, it's the decision making he has that gives him the opportunity to not throw picks. Smart quarterbacks avoid picks because they don't throw into situations that are adverse. And he's got a really good set of receivers. When you talk about experience in an SEC with the guys they've got at wideout, I mean, those guys seem like they've been playing there forever. You know, Seth's one of the best there is. Eli Stowe's been there forever, and we know how fast Schwartz is. They've got a lot of good wideout in terms of their skill set on offense. So he's got guys to protect him around it. And, you know, he's a coach's son that's been around the game his whole life. He knows good decisions, and he's a really good athlete. People don't understand how good a runner he actually is.
So I think a lot of what Smart says there is probably true. I do think, and I mentioned this on yesterday's show, the Auburn receivers are probably better than some people realize because Malzahn typically hasn't always had a great crop of receivers. This is a pretty impressive group here this year, you know, led by Seth Williams there. I also think that Bo Nix in year two is a better quarterback than he probably was as a freshman. And kind of all of this sort of adds up to a scenario where there are a lot of people who kind of expect Auburn to come into Athens on Saturday and simply win the game on the basis of the way that Georgia played against the Razorbacks this past Saturday. Our buddy Barrett Salee, who's from CBS Sports and kind of a frequent guest on our show, although sometimes not always to the enjoyment of some of the people who were listening. They kind of had some trouble with him back here in the summertime. But Barrett Salee on Twitter this week, and I guess on the radio, says that he thinks that Georgia's going to get smoked by Auburn next week. So you got Florida players saying it's about time that Florida passed Georgia in the SEC East. Media people saying Georgia's going to get smoked by Auburn. And so that leads to a little bit of, I would say, pressure on Georgia to go out there and get the job done on Saturday. So how do you do that? How do you take care of your business in that moment? How do you handle what you're supposed to do? And I think that a lot of this centers on Bo Nix. It's one of the reasons why I mentioned what Kirby Smart said about him yesterday. Let's go back to last year here for a moment. Let's look at the stat line that Bo Nix puts up against Georgia. He goes 30 for 50 for 245 yards. He scored a touchdown through the air. He also ran for a touchdown as well. You know, an okay day for a freshman quarterback. But Georgia, by limiting the Auburn points, finds a way to win that game. When you think about the struggles that Georgia's currently experiencing offensively, would you agree with me that it's somewhat fair to say that if Georgia's going to win this game on Saturday, they have to also limit Auburn much the same way they did a year ago? Can you give up much more than 14 points to Auburn on Saturday and feel good about winning this game? I would say not much more than that. You've got to find a way to limit once again. Georgia found two sacks against Bo Nix a year ago. The one from Trayvon Walker at the end of the game ultimately seals the deal in the win. Doesn't Georgia need at least two sacks in this game of Bo Nix on Saturday? We have spent an awful lot of time over the course of the offseason talking about the Georgia defense, what it's capable of doing for the upcoming season. And on a day like Saturday, this upcoming week, I think it's a chance for Georgia to prove that all of those accolades that it's been getting are absolutely appropriate, because I do expect the offense for the Dogs to struggle once again. We're going to talk about that more during the show. I'm not expecting a big breakout performance on the Georgia offense. I'm expecting this to be a Georgia win, though, because Georgia defensively can do to Knicks in its home stadium what it did in hostile territory at Jordan-Hare a year ago. Find a way to limit him, not give up too much, find a way to get to the quarterback, sack him a couple of times. A lot of pressure on that Georgia defense on Saturday to prove riders who think Auburn's about to get this win, to prove them wrong, to prove to people who think all of this is a setup for Florida to overtake Georgia in the SEC East, to prove them wrong there as well. The benchmark for how you beat Auburn, even in a time in which your offense is struggling, was established back in 2019. And that's a blueprint that Georgia, I think, needs to follow again this Saturday. A lot of pressure on the Georgia defense to see that that gets done. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast, radio, streaming video show for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us here today. Thanks so much for being with us. And a huge thanks to our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia for making it all possible. You know, Engineered Solutions of Georgia is a solutions-based company for all of your waterproofing foundation needs. And for those of you like me who are homeowners, that's a big thing to think about here. Those are the kinds of things that can maybe cause you not sleep so good at night, be worried about if you're dealing with them. ESOG understands that. That's why they want to show up, and they got two full-time engineers on staff. When you reach out to them to kind of solve one of your waterproofing or foundation problems, you know, they certainly take your problem to heart, and they'll provide a solution for you. Sometimes it's a simple fix, sometimes it's more complicated. Either way, it's great to have Engineered Solutions of Georgia on your side. They're also proud partners of UGA, which makes them really fun to do business with. It's good to support companies that also support UGA. They're great friends of ours here on Dog Nation Daily, and they are incredibly easy to get in touch with. Phone number could not be easy to remember. Simply dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You see those wet spots showing up in your basement, your crawl space? You see those cracks in your foundation? Don't hesitate to reach out. My friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia, dial them up, 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia, proud partners of UGA. All right, we're going to get Connor Riley here in just a moment. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse, delivered today by Marco's Pizza. And as I mentioned a moment ago, it was news yesterday, maybe somewhat surprising, big news to be sure, that Kirby Smart announced that JT Daniels is cleared for the upcoming game against Auburn, but there's still some unknown factors in all of this. Let's let you hear Smart delivering the news, and then we'll break down what it means.
I know you guys will want to ask the quarterback question, and you'll want to ask it all week. All I can tell you is we're going to continue to work with all the guys we've got to put the best guy in there to give us the best opportunity to win the football games. DeJuan did not play as bad as it seemed to some, and thought he did some good things watching the tape. And he had some unfortunate bad breaks that happened while he was in at quarterback. JT will be cleared. But I don't know how much that changes the picture in terms of reps and development. We'll be looking at everybody across the board. JT's got to be able to show us that he can function efficiently and do it with his knee being able to do it. We always thought he would be cleared by this time anyway, but those guys will all compete, as well as Carson will too, continue to grow at the quarterback position.
So JT cleared, no guarantee of how much he plays, or certainly no indication that he's going to start. Kirby Smart continuing to hold the cards close to the vest, even after admitting that Daniels will be clear for this upcoming Saturday. How about the nature of this competition right now? Is it better if a clear winner emerges? Is it better if Georgia can settle on just one quarterback? Smart also addressed that, too, when he spoke to reporters yesterday.
A lot more important how we play around him and how we support him, because whoever's able to do that the best and get the most out of the people around him is probably going to be the guy that moves the ball and produces. And at the end of the day, that's what we want to do. If that's one guy, if that's two guys, we're not putting ourselves in a pigeonhole and saying we can only have one quarterback. We've got to develop all our quarterbacks. So I know y'all are looking at it in terms of Auburn right now, who's going to play, what's the quarterback, where we're trying to look at our entire roster and say, okay, how are we going to be the best we can be in week 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down the line? Because there's some guys on our team that are going to be better down the line than maybe the guy in front of them. But the only way they're going to get there is through playing. So there's a you know, a big part of making that decision that goes into that. I'm not going to sit here and say we can't play multiple guys or it's got to be one guy. I certainly think it's easier when it's one guy in terms of the continuity with your team and things like that. But we've got to do what gives us the best chance to win. That's what we're going to continue to do as coach.
So here's what I believe. It's obviously a good thing that that JT Daniels is cleared and able to play. You know, clearly that's a good thing. But the same way we cautioned last week about having too many expectations for Dwan Mathis, and maybe prior to that having too many expectations for any of the Georgia quarterbacks, I'm going to say the same thing about JT Daniels on Saturday. You know, putting the pressure on him to kind of come in and be the savior of the Georgia offense is probably asking too much for a guy that has been hurt, has not played very much football in kind of a while here, and still getting acclimated to a new school. Eventually, can JT Daniels be a very good player for Georgia? Of course he can. And maybe on Saturday he plays really well also. But to expect a lot from him in this offense, it's still very much a work in progress, I think sets you up to potentially have kind of the same reaction that some Georgia fans on Saturday when Dwan Mathis dealt with some growing pains that for the most part we should have been able to foresee that he was going to have. So be careful putting too much on JT Daniels. The same way I said, be careful putting too much on Dwan Mathis, I'm going to say the same thing about Daniels if and when he plays on Saturday. This is a game, if Georgia wins it, as I said a moment ago, where it's going to have to be led by its defense once again. I don't think you can expect this offense to be pretty yet. There is still just too much work that has to be done to get this group in kind of place to be like the most high-powered offenses in college football. Can it be good enough to beat Auburn on Saturday? Of course it can. Can it be good enough to be pretty and a lot of highlight plays and things like that? That's just not my level of expectation for the Georgia offense, at least as of yet, but it is a good thing that JT Daniels is cleared. It's Around the Doghouse. It's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. It's America's most beloved pizza. We certainly love our friends at Marco's Pizza here because it's real, authentic Italian pizza made the Italian way. Marco's does great work to help get this pizza delivered to you in a very safe. We're all thinking about our health right now, and Marco's Pizza cooks pizzas up 450-degree oven. It's contactless, touchless delivery after that. Are right there to your door. You get a chance to enjoy that and great savings with our friends at Marco's Pizza right now, too. Big offer here. You can get a large one-topping pizza, 10 chicken wings or dippers. It's just $17.99. You can order today on the Marco's app or at marcos.com and take advantage of great savings from our friends at Marco's Pizza. All right, it's great to have you with us here today. It's Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. A moment ago, I kind of looked at the situation with the Georgia defense to say, can Georgia's defense do against Auburn on Saturday what it did a year ago, and would that be a recipe for success? Later on in the show, I'm going to do the same thing related to a specific question around the Georgia offense, running backs in particular. We'll do that coming up, but for now, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG, let's talk to our buddy Connor Riley.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, well, welcome in Connor Riley, watching the action close on Saturday from our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios. It's actually a really fun setup for games. We're lucky enough to have a good number of TV screens. It's about the perfect, I don't use the word like man cave, it's a little bit basic for me, but it's the perfect kind of man cave type environment, right? You got four TVs in front of you, comfortable seating arrangements. We're kind of in a hole over here. No one really knows how to get to it. You know, Dog Nation World Headquarters Studio is a little bit like the Batcave. There are worse places to kind of get locked in for a college football Saturday than here in our palatial studio, right?
Yeah, my only complaint was that I didn't bring enough snacks. And, you know, you just got to come. It's my first time not being at Sanford Stadium or at a Georgia game in 3+ years. So it's one of those things you just got to get in a groove, get in a routine. So now going forward, we're more prepared. We know for game days now, we got to have snacks.
Yeah, you got to have a lot of snacks, a lot of protein. That's how I kind of get through a big game day Saturday. And there's a lot from the game I want to talk to you about. So let me do Arkansas first, and then we'll get into, like, you know, the Daniel stuff and everything else, because I know you're a big part of the Kirby Smart press conference as of yesterday. I've had my turn to say what I liked, what I didn't like from Georgia on Saturday. And I think there are a lot of both. I think if you fixate too much on how ugly the first half was, I do think you miss some things that are important building blocks for Georgia to be as good as they can be this upcoming season. But you also can't sugarcoat, you know, the fact that I didn't think the Georgia offensive line played very well. I am concerned right now about the fullness of the Georgia running game. It's not quite as built out as I sort of expected it to be. I don't think you can sugarcoat the bad, nor should you overlook the good. So give me your overall thoughts on what you saw from the Dogs and the Hogs.
The first half was the worst performance the Bulldogs have had under Kirby Smart, and I would say it's the worst offensive performance they've had since the 2015 Florida game. It was befuddling for them to be, I think, that unprepared. And it's not all just on Doran Mathis here. I think you really hit on some of the other issues that were out there, some misconnections with some of the wide receivers. I wrote yesterday about some of the issues snapping the football and some of the problems with the offensive line that we've seen. People want to lump stuff onto Dwan Mathis, that offensive performance goes way beyond him. Now, second half, you did see some nice things. I thought the defense was outstanding with the exception of one play throughout. But the offense we saw in that first half, and I know it was a condensed offseason to an extent, but you have to be better than that. You just have to.
Yeah, I like Trey Hill a lot, and I believe he's probably one of Georgia's best five offensive linemen. But when one of your guys, it's supposed to be one of your givens, one of your bedrock guys, you know, Hill's going to get some all SEC votes and some things like that. When a guy like that seemingly has a little bit of a shaky day, all of a sudden everything is called into question because you've got a ton of unknowns as it is. You can't start having erosion from within your known commodities. And so, I mean, I don't want to, you know, overreact here or panic about this, but it's almost like now I'm like, you know, just keep Hill at guard permanently and you know, play Warren Erickson at center. You know, you can't have the center exchange. Connor, there are a lot of gamblers, and you may even know this. If they look at a college football slate on Saturday and they just simply cherry pick teams who have an injured center because, you know, all things being equal, that's a pretty important data point in terms of offensive continuity. You've got to be solid in the center position. I think it's telling that the SEC, in terms of its protocols for, you know, who gets to play and who doesn't, a healthy center is one of the things they mention as one of the things that you need to have to play a football game. Center is a very important position. Trey Hill's a good player, but if he's having snap issues, then you've got to put somebody in the game that's not having those issues.
Yeah, and Trey Hill, it's worth reminding here, is not a natural center. He played one game there in high school, and if you look at his Georgia career, his very first game against Kentucky, he came in to replace an injured Lamont Galliard, and he had issues with the snap in that game, and I played center in high school. I played it for the majority of the time I was actually on the field playing. And the concerning thing with his snaps are, it's not that it's like consistently one way or the other. It's not consistently too low or too high. It's sort of that it's all over the place. The one that went behind Dwan Mathis was a little to his left. There were snaps he was missing low. It was a little concerning just how all over the place he was. But to your point, he is one of Georgia's five best offensive linemen. And I wouldn't be surprised if going forward, that means you move him to guard, and then you have to figure out how you rejigger the rest of the line, because I thought Justin Schaefer did some nice things on Saturday. And then you've got Ben Cleveland as well, who played in a national championship game. So you're having to start and pick and choose to make sacrifices because Trey Hill is having some snapping issues right now.
And I'm not looking to move Ben Cleveland to the bench, but one of the things that's been kind of a hallmark of Georgia is that sort of super sub offensive lineman. I could see Ben Cleveland becoming a little bit of a super sub type guy, that sort of sixth or, you know, seventh man. Georgia seemingly always has a couple, you know, versions of that. I could see Cleveland potentially playing a couple different positions if they really had to have him.
Right. And also because you have a guy like Warren Erickson, who's played center before, who came in and I think really sort of stabilized the line there, and is a guy who can play guard and move around and was going to be the super sub. But given his abilities as a center, you might have to rejigger your line a little bit and figure out, okay, maybe there's a better sort of super sub, so that way we can keep Hill and Justin Schaefer healthy. And if that's Ben Cleveland, that's Ben Cleveland.
I don't want to talk offensive line the entire time, but I think right tackle is also a little bit of an issue, you know, right now too, where Owen Condon was mega praised throughout the entirety of the offseason. It seems like it was justified in terms of how he was working. It seems like he, you know, maybe had some issues on Saturday. Warren McClendon gets a little bit of a shot there. That competition at the very least is ongoing. And, you know, as long as you've got four line spots really getting it done, I think you can be okay at right tackle and still be kind of okay overall. But just given the fact that Georgia had an issue at another offensive line position, any kind of problem at the tackle spot is going to be sort of heightened emphasis because of that. And this was, I would say, for Georgia's a big week to kind of figure out what's going on at right tackle as well.
Yeah, and I think the fortunate thing there is they've got a lot of different bodies to throw out there and at that position to find a solution there. And I will say for Owen Condon, this was his first real significant game action in the game speed. While you can try and replicate it in practice, it's just totally different when you're out there taking live rounds. So they've got a guy like him who they can trot out there who did come back into the game as they rotated between him, Warren, McClendon throughout. And then you've also got some other guys like Xavier Truss and even young guys like Broderick Jones and Tate Ratledge to potentially throw at that if it is still an issue as the season develops.
All right, let me move to Auburn here for a moment. I said this before you joined the show, that if you look at how Georgia beat Auburn a year ago in a game in which Georgia's offense was also struggling pretty mightily, I think you see a blueprint for how you get this win on Saturday. Georgia limited Auburn to 14 points. Bo Nix makes some completions, but ultimately only throws the one touchdown. Georgia gets a couple of sacks in that game. I mean, to me, I'm not saying it's going to be 21-14 again. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying when you look at defensively, just how dynamic Georgia had to be to preserve that win a year ago, I think it's a similar blueprint on Saturday as well. If you're telling me that Bo Nix is going to find a way to lead more scoring drives than he led a year ago, then I do think the game gets really hard for Georgia to win.
I think that this game comes down to Georgia's defensive line. The biggest question I think we have with Auburn, and Auburn's offensive line played well last week, but it's a mostly remade offensive line from a year ago. Can Jordan Davis have a stellar game? Can Trayvon Walker, can Jalen Carter have stellar games? Can Malik Herring do stuff off the edge? And then you bring in guys like Nolan Smith, Azeez Ojulari, Jermaine Johnson as edge rushers. I think if those guys can dominate the game on Sunday, or at least have a clear leg up over the Auburn offensive line, I think that's the easiest and most straightforward way to a Georgia win.
Yeah, I don't know that you can be a defensive-led team and win the national championship right now. We've just seen too many dynamic offensive performances, from national champions in recent years. But in these big SEC showdowns, like these like classic games, you know, bitter rivalries, two good teams on both sides, defense still really matters in this league. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those games for the Georgia defense to kind of show that it is as advertised, as you said, both from an edge rushing standpoint. You know, I don't know that Auburn ran the ball great on Saturday against Kentucky, making sure that remains true on Saturday with what you do with the tip of the spear of this Bulldogs defense. You know, defense still matters in games like this, and this is frankly a chance for Georgia's defense to earn its press clippings after a offseason of just, you know, one salutation after another. Is that the right word? One piece of praise after another. You know, this is a chance to kind of go out there and back all that up, I would say.
Right, because as I wrote this morning, Auburn has some very good receivers. And Seth Williams, who actually was statistically better than George Pickens was a season ago. You have Anthony Schwartz, a real weapon out there. And Eli Stove is a reliable senior that they have as a pass catcher. So this Georgia secondary that is probably the best in the country and can match up, I think, with this Auburn secondary, with these Auburn wide receivers, they're going to need to win their fair share of battles. And if they do that, I think it's going to make life very difficult for Bo Nix.
Yeah, I don't think we think of receivers very much when we think of Auburn. You know, I do think that Jared Stidham was dangerous at making deep throws in 2017. It's one of the things that made them hard to beat in that November game that a lot of us would like to try to forget, the one rare moment that Auburn's had success against Georgia in recent seasons. But for the most part, we don't think of deep threats for Auburn. We don't really think of, you know, great receivers, but Schwartz because of the speed, and we talked about this, you know, a lot yesterday, Schwartz because of the speed, Stove because of the experience, and Seth Williams just a really good player. Mm-hmm. This is just a better crop of Auburn receivers than we're used to, I think, seeing Gus Malzahn have.
Right, and that's going to elevate Bo Nix, and as Nix gets more and more comfortable in this new Chad Morris offense, I think that's going to continue to make them more dangerous. I said this when the schedule came out. I think Georgia really benefits this year from playing an Auburn team early in the year, whereas I think later in the year, this is going to be a much more dangerous, more, I think, better team as the season goes on.
All right, I want to finish the time we have left looking at quarterbacks. You know, JT Daniels, Kirby Smart announces yesterday cleared to play. I'm obviously, as a fan, happy about this. I think that Daniels' presence is certainly a welcome addition to the Georgia roster, whether he starts on Saturday or not. It's never a bad thing to have more good players, and Daniels has the potential to be a good player. But this is one of those things I've been kind of, I guess, nibbling around the edges on for kind of a while now. I'm getting a little restless with quarterback drama involving George. It seems like we're talking way more about these guys off the field than we are on the field, whether it be Jamie Newman's opt-out or, you know, JT Daniels' health situation and the weird ways in which that's been discussed. I think the timing of announcing this on a Monday morning after 2 days prior to that, supposedly Daniels wasn't healthy enough to play. I think all of that just kind of seems really weird too. Whatever's trying to be orchestrated here just doesn't seem to be working, because the drama off the field in terms of who's going to play and who's not is not seemingly increasing the level of play for Georgia quarterbacks on the field. This has been a position that's been a problem now for Georgia really for quite some time. I'm ready to see this conversation stabilize. I'm ready to see, you know, there be more talk about what's happening between the white lines than what might be happening, you know, outside the boundary of play. I don't want to come down too hard on this, but there's just a lot of quarterback drama for Georgia as of late, and some of these to me seem to be self-inflicted wounds.
So look at some of the other elite teams and the quarterback decisions they've had to make in recent seasons. Dabo Swinney had Kelly Bryant at Clemson took him to a college football playoff the year ago. He had Trevor Lawrence as a freshman on the bench. He said, Trevor, you're a guy. I think you're going to be the guy that gets over the hump. It worked out for them. You look at Ohio State, you know, Dwayne Haskins leaves. They're talking to Justin Fields. They commit to Justin Fields as much as he commits to them. Comes in, has a great first season there in Ohio State. And I think you even look at Nick Saban in Alabama. That 2017 year, he stuck with Jalen Hurts and made it very clear Jalen Hurts was the Alabama quarterback. And then when he wasn't, he stuck with Tua Tagovailoa and said, Tua is our guy. He was very decisive, I think, in making his quarterback decisions. Right now, with Kirby Smart, he wants to play this close to the vest, and I understand that. But I do think there's a benefit to be had of publicly coming out and publicly laying your cards on the table and saying, this is our guy. This guy is our quarterback. Maybe Dwan does play a little bit better on Saturday if Kirby comes out and says, hey, Dwan Mathis is our starter for week one. JT's not clear yet. We have full absolute confidence in what Dwan is able to do. And with JT Daniels this week, I expect him to play now that he is cleared, because I have said if he is healthy to play, he will start. And I'll be really interested to sort of see how he comes out and plays given what's transpired with this Georgia quarterback room over the past month.
Yeah, all I'll say is that the obsession with competition at this position is not really producing a better starting quarterback. In fact, I think in some cases the competition at Georgia may have gotten this wrong. And the obsession with secrecy around the quarterback is not really giving Georgia a competitive edge, really. I mean, I think that some of the things that we've seen from Georgia in terms of how it's handled quarterbacks has not really produced better play on the field. And, you know, I don't know. There's only so many ways you can slice that up. And, you know, maybe JT Daniels sort of steps in and maybe he's great. And maybe he just really was hurt this entire time. But the timing of it being announced yesterday, after supposedly he was too hurt to play against Arkansas, that's just going to come across to some people as just kind of weird.
Right. And he traveled to Arkansas as well. So, you know, what is the difference between him being, you know, is there really all that much of a difference between him being cleared on Saturday and him being cleared on Friday? And now I guess him being cleared on Monday morning. I think with Kirby, it's a 90-10 thing. 90% of the way he does things is the absolute correct way. He gets the most, I think, out of a lot of players on this roster. He does a great job building it. This Georgia team has won a ton of games over the last couple of years, 3 straight SEC East titles. But it's the 10% that he doesn't do well that right now I think is sticking out more so than what he actually does well. And it's just this quarterback position that he's always had sort of an interesting take or approach on. You saw his first year, he starts Grayson Lambert game one against North Carolina, then he goes and puts Jacob Eason out there for the rest of the season. Next year, 2017, starts Jacob Eason and then pretty clearly goes with Jake Fromm and sticks with Jake Fromm and commits to Jake Fromm and says Jake is our guy in a way I don't think really has done so since. And then 2018, the whole Fields Fromm fiasco was just, I think, really mismanaged from specifically in that SEC championship game where Jake Fromm was having the game of his life and they were still weirdly trying to figure out ways to get Justin Fields in there. I think what I want to see Kirby do is really just commit to a quarterback, say, this is our guy. We believe he is the leader of our offense and the leader of our football team. And if he does that, I think that's going to ultimately start to answer some of these bigger questions we have.
And my assumption is that it'll eventually be Daniels, just because Daniels got more credentials in comparison to other guys. I do expect Stetson Bennett to probably start on Saturday, just because that seems like kind of a Kirby Smart thing to do. Maybe Daniels comes in relief. But even if Daniels plays the lion's share of the snaps on Saturday and is healthy enough to do so, listen, I'm a huge fan. I'm rooting for Georgia. You know, ultimately, I'm pretty optimistic about the overall trajectory of the season. But I don't think the offense is going to be pretty on Saturday, even if Daniels is healthy enough to play most of the snaps. I just don't think they're there yet.
Georgia's last 10 SEC games, they've gone under on the point total 9 times. Yeah. I think if you want to see a Georgia win on Saturday, it needs to be 10 out of 11. I think the defense, once again, is going to have to carry the flag here for Georgia and make a few plays and set up this offense. Sort of defense and special teams, I think, really helped out that Georgia offense last week, especially when it was looking a little hairy there. They have the block punt that gives them short field position. They forced 3 turnovers. One of those was returned for a touchdown. This offense is still finding its sea legs, and I'm not saying that it won't find it later in the season, especially I think against the back half of that schedule. I do think eventually they start to get things clicking, but with a front-loaded schedule here, it's still going to take the offense a little bit of time to find themselves, especially when they're still rotating and trying to figure out that quarterback position.
Yeah, the Stokes pick 6 on Saturday was a lot like the Stokes forced fumble against Tennessee a year ago, where it leads to a defensive score that ultimately made the margin of victory seem a lot more comfortable and a lot safer than maybe the majority of the game probably felt like.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, we've talked a lot about the offense today. I do say, with the exception of that one touchdown they gave up, which that drive should have been a three and out if not for a pass interference penalty. The Georgia defense played outstanding on Saturday and lived up to the hype. Rakeem Boyd, we heard a lot about him during the week, 21 total rushing yards. Felipe Franks kind of looked like the Felipe Franks we all thought he would look like, and my hat goes off to the Georgia defense, Dan Lanning, and the way they played on Saturday.
All right, good stuff there from Connor Riley. Thanks for being here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We'll look forward to reading a whole bunch from you more at Dog Nation here this week.
Yep, as always, it was a pleasure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC 3.
All right, good stuff from Connor Riley on that. And, yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack. I do think it's going to be a defensive day for Georgia on Saturday. I think it needs to be. I think the running game factor's pretty heavy to that, too. And we're going to talk more about that coming up here today before we're done on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Before we do that, let's do our SEC through, and let's focus in for a moment on the upcoming games for the upcoming week. A little bit of an early preview. We like to do that on Tuesdays. We call it our MyBookie Best Bets, not only looking at the games in the SEC, but those expected winners based on the point spreads that you see there at MyBookie. So let's throw these up on the screen. We'll kind of roll through this. Talked a little Florida off the top of the program. Florida as an 18.5-point favorite against South Carolina on Saturday. They're in Gainesville, the home opener here. And this is one of those where, you know, I expected more from South Carolina against Tennessee than we ultimately got. I do think the Gamecocks had a chance there. But this is also one of those deals where, you know, for as much as I love kind of beating up on Florida and making fun of them, the one thing I don't make fun of Florida very much on is how they perform as a big favorite against lesser SEC competition. For the most part, Dan Mullen's been pretty good in that regard. Now, a year ago, Florida got helped by some officiating calls against the Gamecocks, so maybe that lingers as some bad blood here. But for the most part, Florida handles its business against lesser opponents, and it gets a chance to play another one of those on Saturday. It's Missouri-Tennessee. I think that Missouri was saving itself a little bit versus Alabama in week one. We'll see if they have anything for the Vols there in week two. I don't have much of an early opinion on that game. As of yet, this is a sneaky good rivalry, though. These two teams have developed a little bit of bad blood, some of it on the recruiting trail in recent years. There's a little bit of bad blood here between Tennessee and Missouri. We'll hear more about that as the week goes along. Texas A&M and Alabama. Admittedly, I was wrong with the Aggies in week one, and you wonder, does that mean you're now about to be wrong with the Aggies across the board? Texas A&M, from a scoring standpoint, not very impressive against Vanderbilt. That game much, much closer in the final margin than almost anybody expected it to be. This was a game prior to that where I would have expected the Aggies to play well. 16-point underdogs at Alabama. Of course, Texas A&M famously won in Tuscaloosa back in 2012. You know, I'm not going to completely run away from Texas A&M as of yet, but when you think about all the attrition off the Aggies roster, the top receiver, starting linebacker, they've had some opt-outs lately, you wonder, you know, how much of an impact does that make on what's supposed to be happening in Tuscaloosa on Saturday? I'm not completely scared off of Texas A&M as of yet, but I am definitely paying a little closer attention to some of the departures they had and kind of looking back to see why was against Vanderbilt that the final margin wasn't more impressive. This was supposed to be a day in which Texas A&M, breathing a sigh of relief after the really, really tough schedules that have been played in recent years, this was supposed to be a game in which the Aggies got a chance to flex. Texas A&M, I think, is welcoming in more fans to Kyle Field than a lot of other SEC teams are able to do, but just not quite happening for Texas A&M. On Saturday, they get the win against Vanderbilt, but it's a closer game than it was supposed to be. They now get a chance to try to put a scare in Alabama. The media has really fallen in love with the Crimson Tide as of late. This is a pretty good game, a very interesting game, but we shall see how it goes. Ole Miss against Kentucky. Obviously, Ole Miss trying to bounce back from the Florida loss. Did some things offensively. Could not stop the Gators. Kentucky probably felt like it had its chances against Auburn. Couldn't take advantage of that. This is one of those games in which Kentucky is almost everything that Ole Miss isn't. Kentucky's experience in the head coaching spot. Stoops has been there for a while. You know, Kentucky probably a little bit solid on its lines of scrimmage. It's a physical team. Whereas Ole Miss, probably the more spectacular of the two teams. My early lean on this one is probably with the Wildcats, especially being at home there. That just sort of feels like a real nice opportunity for Kentucky. Arkansas and Mississippi State, you know, classic example of why it is that I'm just not a Mike Leach believer, and the win against LSU does very little to change my mind on that. People are really entertained by the, did you see the bandwagon video that Mississippi State put out yesterday? I don't have it to show it to you on the screen, but you probably saw that. If not, it's easy to find. So, you know, it's a funny video. It's well done. You know, Mike Leach leading the bandwagon for the Bulldogs. But that's a lot of patting yourself on the back after one game. And it's the kind of thing that it's not other SEC fans. In other words, it's not going to be Ole Miss fans who turn on that when things go wrong. It's Mississippi State fans themselves. This is just not in keeping with the SEC tradition. That kind of stuff works well in Pullman. It works well in Lubbock, where there is no attention, where there is no fame, and you have to do anything you can to sort of conjure up interest. In an SEC town, even a small outpost like Starkville, there's already attention. There's already intensity. You don't have to do anything to conjure that up even more. It already exists to the full level. Not very SEC for me. And eventually that's going to really, really bite a Leach. But obviously right now, the Bulldogs feeling pretty good about themselves because they got the win against LSU. It was just a couple of years, though, ago that Mississippi State also got a big win at the beginning of season against LSU. And that game wasn't particularly close. And yet the Bulldogs did very little to maximize on that. So just be careful, you know, kind of how you pay too much attention to stuff like this. You got Auburn and Georgia on Saturday. Georgia's a touchdown favorite there. LSU going to Vanderbilt on Saturday. Vanderbilt didn't move the football against LSU a year ago, so do with that what you will. We'll make that our MyBookie best bets as part of our SEC through. And do not forget, when it comes to the picks here this week, my week one, not spectacular. Your picks, in many ways, probably better than mine. Well, if you want to make some money on your expertise, the way to do that is with my friends at MyBookie. Here's what you do. Go to the internet, use your search engine, throw in MyBookie there to your Google machine, as sometimes the people say. Do that for yourself, and before you know it, you'll find MyBookie. Then when you get there, use the promo code DOGNATION. It's all one word, spelled D-A-W-G. Use the promo code DOGNATION, and then after that, you can play, you win, you get paid. And really, you get paid before you even make your first bet, because MyBookie's got a big sign-up bonus for you. You can get up to $1,000. You can get your first deposit doubled. Big, big sign-up bonus incentives for you when you choose MyBookie, but you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION to make that happen. All one word, spelled D-A-W-G, with our friends at MyBookie. Find it online. Use the promo code DOGNATION. It's winning season at MyBookie. Make sure you take advantage of that. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, let's turn our attention back now to Georgia and Auburn on Saturday. As I said before, Georgia a 7-point favorite in this game, at least right now, against the Tigers. We'll see how that line moves in one direction or another as we get close to the week. And in one respect, the steam around Auburn would pull it that way. The return of JT Daniels could potentially pull it the other way. But I think one of the big issues for Georgia is related to not what happens at quarterback, what happens at running back. For all the attention the Georgia quarterback position got on Saturday, I think hiding just below the surface on that was the fact that I would have liked to have seen a little more from the Georgia running game on Saturday than I did, and particularly the other running back. I thought Zamir White was fine on Saturday, 5.5 yards a carry. You can't really, you know, complain about that too much. I would have liked to have seen more from James Cook, and just in general, more rushing yards in particular at a time in which the passing game for Georgia was kind of struggling. Kirby Smart was asked yesterday to give his evaluation of the Georgia running backs. Here's a little taste of some of what he had to say.
All our backs got the ability to make people miss. They've got to do it at a higher level. We got to block much better on the second level in terms of our receivers, cutoff blocking and turning a couple 10, 12-yard runs into bigger runs, which we missed opportunities there. And we got to move people up front a little better. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it takes to be able to run the ball. But when you look across our league, I think you'll see – you show me a team that's running the ball really, really well and efficiently, and it's hard to do in our league. You got to be able to throw and catch the ball. You got to be able to score points. And
so you hear Kirby Smart there talking about the running game. You know, last year, Georgia, and this is going to be a theme for me this week, looking at what Georgia did a year ago against Auburn and asking, can that be replicated on Saturday? Georgia did not have a huge rushing total last season against the Tigers, 141 yards, but that's more than Georgia rushed for on Saturday against Arkansas. Georgia, 121 yards there in that game. So can you find more, whether it be a bigger opportunity for Kenny McIntosh, or you assume that Kendall Milton is now healthier to give you a little more than he may have gave you this past Saturday? Milton doesn't really get involved late. Can you find more carries for Zamir White to allow him to kind of add a big total? You know, Georgia's going to need to find more rushing yards against a better defense, Auburn, on Saturday than it had against Arkansas. I think at the very least, Georgia probably needs to match what it did on the ground a year ago when it had 141 yards rushing. That's part of the blueprint for beating Auburn on Saturday. Let me let you hear a little bit more from Kirby Smart talking about how Georgia gets it done in the running game.
You know, historically, we've been able to run the ball at a good rate compared to a lot of people in our league, and we didn't do that Saturday, but there was, you know, it was one of those things where there were some holes, there were some things there that backs didn't necessarily miss. Sometimes the snap was bad. And when you've got a bad snap and it gets you off direction, you can't have that. You know, it takes a cumulative effect of everybody doing their job. And if one guy's off, one receiver doesn't cut off a safety, he turns, you know, what would be a 20-yard gain into a 5-yard gain. If the snap's off, you go back and look, there's a couple times the snap's just off key, and it brings the quarterback offline, and then it brings the running back offline. But got to do a better job blocking and running the ball. But I do think that we've got the people to do that with.
There's no doubt about that. The talent seems to be there. Zamir White was the most coveted running back in the country for the class of 2018. James Cook's still a big name on the scene there, too. Dejon Edwards, Kenny McIntosh, Kendall Milton, all very, very impressive talent. But finding a way to use them effectively is a big deal for Georgia. A year ago against Auburn, Dogs averaged 3.9 yards per rush. Against Arkansas on Saturday, though, just 2.9 yards per rush. It's an inferior defense, and yet Georgia's performance not quite as impressive. It's got to be better on Saturday against a defense geared up to stop it. Using the running game to a high level, a big part of the recipe for the Dogs this upcoming Saturday. And I'm like everybody else. I'm a traditionalist. Actually, not everyone is a traditionalist, but as a traditionalist, I am like many of you in that it just seems really weird to be talking Georgia-Auburn for week two. Now, we knew already it was going to be an October game between these two teams, so that was already going to be the kind of thing I was going to have a little trouble getting used to. But in this particular year, the second game of the season, already talking Georgia-Auburn, is just a little bit of a strange thing all the way around. And really, for those of us who've, you know, kind of been in the fog of, would there even be a season? Can we find a way to make this happen? You've got to shake all those cobwebs off and get ready for not just a game, but a gigantic game, one of the biggest that Georgia will play all season long on Saturday. So we're getting our game faces on. Game day going to be there, and we're going to be ready for it here at Dog Nation also. And thinking about that rivalry doesn't stop us. Thinking about the lousy, stinking Gators, how about 1,431 days of the Gatorator Updater? Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.